The following is a bonus episode of the Practical Prepping Podcast. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Practical Prepping Podcast. We're helping everyday people become prepared for whatever emergencies come our way. Where gear is good, but knowledge is better, because the more you know, the less you have to carry. We're your hosts, Mark and Krista Lawley. All right, we're back here, Mark and Krista, at the podcast, and we want to talk a little bit more about firearms, and particularly the ones of interest to preppers. So this is going to be part two of a two-part series that we've titled Understanding Firearms, Their History, and Their Importance to Being Prepared. First, if you believe the world is about to experience a zombie apocalypse, or if you believe a total societal collapse is about to occur and there may be marauding hordes roaming from house to house, then AR-15s or AK-74s, the semi-version of the AK-47, is probably the first firearm you should acquire. And a ton of ammo and magazines and a whole lot of first aid supplies.
Then again, if that's your plan, you probably aren't listening to this podcast. We talk more about surviving those normal things. Things like natural disasters, job loss, supply chain interruptions and shortages. We talk about food and water and storage and not about the best bullets for taking out zombies.
Well, with that being said, firearms can be an important part of practical prepping, though it doesn't have to be. It is a personal choice. Even if you believe firearms are not for you, go ahead and listen to this whole episode. It will make you more knowledgeable, and who knows, it might help you see things differently.
The question often comes up, what firearm should I buy? And it's a somewhat complicated answer. It depends.
It depends on your local laws, what you're allowed to have or to carry. And it also depends on the purpose for the firearm. Are you using it for home defense, like in a shotgun or a handgun? Or are you interested in hunting for food, as in using a rifle or a shotgun?
I see the question regularly in forums, and I've even been asked, if I could have only one firearm for SHTF, what would it be? In my particular case, it would be a 12-gauge pump shotgun. I'd have a 12-gauge pump shotgun with two barrels. I'd have an 18-inch for defense. And in that, I would shoot double-aught or triple-aught buckshot. I would also have a 26-inch rifled barrel for hunting. So you can use slugs for larger game. In fact, with that 12-gauge shotgun, you can take any game in North America. And with that 26-inch barrel, you can have changeable chokes. So you can take anything, rabbits, squirrels, birds, pheasants, ducks, and you can use any assortment of shot shells. Thankfully, though, we live in a country where we can have more than one. In particular, we're going to talk about five of those guns.
And you choose which ones best suit you. You choose what order fits your situation. You choose to get any, all, or none. All of these are for survival and defensive purposes, and many preppers may not agree with our particular order, and that's okay, because this is our opinion. If you disagree, drop us an email with your thoughts. We'd like to hear what you're thinking.
And our opinion will be controversial in some prepping circles and in some firearm circles, but prepping is a personal thing. To own or not to own firearms is a personal choice. What firearms to own or carry is a choice of personal preference. If you own no firearms, but you plan to incorporate them into your plan, the order of importance will depend on what you personally expect to happen or need them for.
If you expect to be facing hordes of zombies, alien frogs, or marauding gangs, then you will need a few good quality AR-style sporting rifles, a large stack of magazines, and a lot of ammo. You'll also need a lot of first aid supplies. Also, we hope that they're the slow walkers, you know, like in The Walking Dead, rather than those fast ones in Z Nation.
Not sure I could outrun those.
Well, slow walkers are easier to outrun, and they're easier to hit on the move, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's look at the firearms we believe that a prepper should consider and the order in which they should be considered.
Number one, my first choice, my first recommendation is a handgun. A handgun for personal defense. It needs to be a concealable handgun. It needs to be a defensive caliber.
Nothing like a 22 or a 25 or a 32. These handguns need to be at a 380 or larger for self-defense. We want you to stay with the common calibers of 9mm, a 38, which also uses 357, 40 caliber or 45 caliber. The type of ammo needed for those guns will be easier to find after an SHTF, whether you're having to scrounge around or maybe even barter and trade.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to find things like 10mm. Now, that may be your favorite caliber, but it's not that popular. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad round. It's a good round, but it's not that common to find people that own a 10mm, at least outside of your circle. So if you're having to scrounge or you're having to barter, it may make more sense to stay with the common calibers. Now, when it comes to weapons, particularly handguns, they're available in small and light to big and heavy. Now, the first choice would be a high-capacity semi-automatic handgun with some extra magazines. Several reasons for this. They're quicker to reload than a revolver. They carry more ammo than a revolver. But there is a bigger learning curve to them. So my second choice would be a quality revolver with some speed loaders. Speed loaders are nothing but a piece of plastic round the size of the cylinder, and it's made to fit that particular gun. And when the firearm is empty, it holds five or six, whatever that particular firearm holds, and you just slide it down. It fills all five or all six cylinders at the same time, and you just twist it, and it releases all of those cartridges into that chamber at one time. And you can reload a revolver in just a couple of seconds with a speed loader. Not a problem.
And in your second choice, you also want to make sure that your handgun is concealable. You can conceal a much larger caliber than you might realize. Mark actually conceals a 1911 Colt 45 under a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's just I've carried one since I was 19 years old. And I learned to hide that weapon very well. The holster that I use just holds it right against my body, and a t-shirt just drops right over it, and people do not notice it. But the point of what I'm making here is that you can conceal a large handgun. I conceal a Colt Trooper 357 with a 6-inch barrel in a shoulder holster. Now, that's not a pocket gun. That gun's 10 or 11 inches long in its total length. And I'm able to hide that or conceal that in a shoulder holster. So don't think that you're going to have to go to a small gun in order to be able to conceal it. Now, I'm not knocking small guns. We have some that will fit in our pocket. We have some that are much easier to conceal. You're not as good at concealing a large handgun as I am because of this sheer amount of experience that I have had in doing that. When I bought my first 45, I think that was the second gun that I had. And the other one was a 6-inch single action 357. So for self-defense, it made total sense to be able to carry the 45, and I learned to carry that, and I learned to dress properly for concealing that weapon.
Now, you mentioned about dress. I was sitting here thinking, too, that I also use a belly band holster because it works with any kind of clothing that I happen to be wearing. A lot of my clothing is not geared for wearing, say, like a belt or anything that would hang on a belt. And a lot of women are very comfortable with carrying a belly band. And I carry an Easy Shield. And it's so comfortable in that holster that there are times when I actually forget that I'm wearing it. It's just become something that's comfortable. So my advice to the listener also is to carry a concealed weapon that is at least somewhat comfortable and get comfortable with carrying it the best way that you can if you're interested in carrying it on your person. I personally know of ladies who have what's known as a concealed carry purse. It's a special adapted pocketbook that they can hold their gun in, or if they just have a regular bag. Personally, I don't believe in my firearm being in my purse. I believe in my firearm being on my person. I want to be wearing my defense because my purse may be separated from me by force or otherwise. And if all of my defense is in that bag, I'm pretty well lost
out. Yeah, it needs to be carried on body, and you mentioned comfort, and there are very comfortable ways to carry. And if it's not comfortable, you're less likely to carry it at all times. And what you're talking about carrying it on body, it doesn't need to be in the vehicle. It doesn't need to be in a purse or a bag. When you get out of the car, and this is my objection to things like the concealed carry purse. When you get out of the car at the gas station, you don't take your purse with you.
No, it stays inside the car.
It stays inside the car. Now, if something happens while you're at that gas pump and somebody comes up, if that weapon is in the car or in your purse or in your bag or anywhere other than on your person, you're in trouble.
You're unarmed, basically.
Good point. You're basically unarmed. So you may have to fight your way to your gun rather than being able to just draw your gun. So,
and I want to touch on something just quickly, what you said. I realize that we have listeners that work in certain jobs where they're not permitted to take their firearm out of their vehicle while they're at work. There are places where they allow you to have anything you want in your car so long as it stays in your car. We acknowledge that. We understand that some of us have to work in settings and situations where we cannot have our weapon on us. So we don't want you to break or violate any corporate laws or anything that you've agreed to. We want you to be a very good citizen and cooperate with whatever laws. But if you are permitted to have your firearm in your vehicle at least, and you're comfortable with where you've concealed it, where it's not showing and someone can't look in your car and see it, you know, be very wise with concealing it in your car.
And there are holsters available that you can have it on your body, attached to your body while you're driving to work. And when you get into the parking lot, you can unsnap or unclip that holster and put it where it needs to go. And then when you get back in that vehicle after work, you can put it back onto your body.
Yes, we just want to reiterate that although we ourselves condone the proper, legal, and responsible use of firearms, we also want to be very clear when we're telling our listeners that abide by the laws and the regulations under which you must exist. Mm-hmm. We want to be law-abiding, we want to be conscientious, and we want to be compliable with what authorities say, you know, in different areas. So I just want to make that extremely clear.
All right, let's go back to carrying it at all times that we're allowed. And I understand that. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to carrying at all times that we're allowed and the fact that it needs to be comfortable to carry. To be comfortable to carry, you really need two things. One, you need a quality holster. Now, when we're talking about a quality holster, we're not talking about one of those $9 cheapy nylons from a big box store. We're talking about a quality holster. And there are lots of options. And I think we carry probably in every one of these. You've already mentioned the belly band, and that's a very good option for you. It's a very good option for a lot of men as well as women. There's the inside the waistband holster. You have outside the waistband holsters. You have shoulder holsters. One of my favorite inside the waistband is the Crossbreed Super Tuck. It's a tuckable holster. Now, we have no association with Crossbreed other than the fact that for probably 10 or 12 years, I've been wearing their holster. I think you've done that as well. You carried a Walther PPK in a Crossbreed inside the waistband holster for quite some time. I carry a 45 ACP in a Crossbreed Super Tuck, and it's a tuckable holster. Now, when we say tuckable, the way it's made, once you put the weapon in the holster, you can then pull your shirt tail down over the weapon and slide it between the holster and your belt. And so you can wear this holster with your shirt tail tucked in, and nobody knows it's there. It's a great holster, Crossbreed Super Tuck. And I think it's crossbreed.com or crossbreedholsters.com, but go take a look. There's also an outside waistband paddle holster. And that's one I was mentioning. It slides, the paddle slides down between your pants, and it's inside your belt, inside your pants, and your gun is outside your pants. I have several of those. But I also use quite often a belt holster for outside waistband. And for me, that's just probably the most comfortable way if I'm wearing something over that. Now, if we're going to the home improvement store, if we're going to dinner or whatever, I just put an untucked shirt over that and it hides it very well.
Sometimes you wear like a professional looking, like a photographer's vest, a multi-pocketed vest, just for casual looks, and it just makes access to your firearm a little easier.
And I can conceal any size handgun we own inside of that. Now, the second thing, in addition to a quality holster, is a quality gun belt for support. Now, there's a great difference in a belt made to support a gun and a belt, even a high-quality belt that you get at a box store or a department store. It is built, it is designed to support the weight of a firearm without sagging. And believe me, it makes all the difference in the world. Now, the one that I currently have, and I've been wearing this particular belt for 10 or 12 years, literally, and it came from The Belt Man, and their website is thebeltman.net. Again, the only association I have with these folks is I have purchased with my own money their product and used their product for multiple years. Thebeltman.net. Now, crossbreed.com also sells gun belts, as well as gunbelts.com. But you need a quality gun belt for support. These are made, there's several ways they do it. Two layers with the grains turned different directions. Some of them you can have a stiffener between those two particular pieces of leather. Now, I showed you the other day the one that I've been wearing. It's got some wear on it. It's got some paint on it. It's got some scratches on it. And it's about time for me to get another belt. And this next one I get will have that stiffener in it. And I'll be honest, I don't remember if the one I have, if I ordered it with the stiffener or without. But it's been an awesome belt.
We do encourage you also to get some firearms training. And we're talking about more than just a concealed carry weapons class. I actually was required in North Carolina to attend an 8-hour class, and I did so, which included introductions to the types of firearms, the understanding of the laws regarding firearms at that time, and it also did involve a very brief amount of time actually firing the firearms, which I would have loved to have had more time to do that. But it was certainly an important class to have, but training is not a one-shot deal, pun intended. Training is something that is done on a repeated level, something that is practiced and sought after, and you improve upon skill. So even if you've been enjoying a firearm for 45, 50, or 60 years, anyone can always benefit from increased and continued training, which you can receive at your local range, the local gun shop. There are a variety of areas where you can seek out personal training or being able to utilize an indoor range or an outdoor range.
Yeah, the concealed carry weapons class is really not training. It fulfills their legal requirement. Now, when it comes to training, what we're talking about in training is training to stay alive in a gunfight. And you didn't cover that in your concealed carry weapons class.
No, that was not part of our
class. It was all about the law. It was about when you could fire, where you can carry your gun, how you can carry it. At the end of this time period, you went out to the range and demonstrated that you could fire 30 rounds of a .22 semi-automatic.
At three different distances.
At three different distances. None of those very long.
No.
And you could do that without shooting up the world. And so that fulfilled the legal requirement. So your CCW class is not training. And training is not your spouse or your brother. It's not...
Or your mom or your sister.
Yeah, it's not somebody just showing you how to use the weapon. Unless your brother or your spouse is somebody like Tiger McGee.
Oh.
Now, Tiger McGee is an amazing firearms instructor. And we're planning, I don't even know that you knew this, but we're planning on having a day with Tiger McGee in the late spring of this next year.
Oh.
Let me jump in here for just a second and interrupt. I was giving the contact information for Tiger McGee, and I gave that incorrectly, and I wanted to come back and correct that. The name of his company is Shootrite, Shootrite, Firearms Academy. He is on Facebook, and you can go to Facebook and simply type in, search Shootrite, and Tiger McGee will come right up. And we just wanted to correct that before we go any further. And I know he's having some website issues right now, but he's all over the internet. He's written books. He's got training videos. And he does classes, and we're going to bring some kinfolks together, and we're going to do a class with Tiger McGee, Lord willing, next spring. So we recommend that you do get some firearms training and learn what you are doing. Okay, so our first recommendation is a handgun for personal defense.
Our second recommendation would be a .22 caliber rifle, which is a great survival weapon. This is what will help you hunt and put food on the table or over the campfire, whatever your situation is. A .22 caliber rifle is really a good firearm for landing small game, such as squirrels and rabbits. It's also good for varmint control when you're trying to pop off some rats or some gophers or chipmunks or whatever wildlife is creating some problems for you. You can certainly control them with a .22.
Yeah, and the .22 is available in all actions. You can get it in single shot, you can get it in a pump, you can get it in semi-automatic, even the AR platform. And it's available in lever action, bolt action, any type of action. There's a .22 available for that. Now, the Ruger 10/22 semi-automatic rifle is probably one of the most popular as well as one of the most dependable .22 semi-automatics on the market today. Lots of folks have them, us included, and they're actually a fun and inexpensive rifle to shoot. There's also some breakdown backpack models. You know, when you see folks that are spending weeks or whatever out in the woods, they may have a backpack rifle in that backpack when you meet them. They make some very light ones. Now, there's one called that's designated as the AR-7, and I think Armalite put that out to start with, and it's a very, very innovative rifle. It was actually designed for Air Force pilot survival kits, and everything, it breaks down, and the barrel slides into the stock. And it can be, there's a cap that goes over that, and it floats. So it's a great rifle to have in a canoe or in a boat or something like that. It's a semi-automatic. It packs very small. And another thing about a .22 rifle is it can be easily scoped. A lot of folks started out shooting with a .22 rifle with a scope. Great for squirrels. And it's easier to hit with a scope. But that's why I recommend that if you're teaching kids, use an unscoped single-shot rifle, whether it's lever action, bolt action, or if you have a semi-automatic, put one round at a time in there. It makes it very safe, but it also teaches them to use open sights. You know, a lot of people are so accustomed to a scope today that they would have difficulty using an open sight. Anyway, that's our second recommendation, is a .22 caliber rifle, and that's after you've purchased a self-defense handgun.
Our third recommendation is going to be a pump shotgun in either a 12 or a 20 gauge. And we talked a few minutes ago, or might have been the last episode, about a 12 gauge pump shotgun that's available in 20 gauge as well. Give us some of the highlights of the 12s and the 20s.
Well, the 12 gauge is probably the standard. It's the big boy. Now, it does come with quite a punch to it, quite a kick on both ends. I know you don't like shooting a 12 gauge. It kicks too much. And so a 20 gauge is a better option for you and for those that are averse to heavier recoil. They make a great 20 gauge pump youth model, and it's basically the same gun, but shorter. youth have shorter arms than do adults, usually. Now, we've got some youth grandsons that I'm not sure that's so true. They've got some long arms on them, but those are going to be some tall boys. And these models are good for home defense. They're good for hunting most things, at least in North America. Depending on how you have it set up, you can use slugs, buckshot, birdshot. You can hunt ducks with them. And they're just, for most of us, they're fun to shoot. But they do have a lot of recoil. But it's a very, very good addition to the prepper's
arsenal.
Well, I wasn't going to use the word arsenal. To the prepper's gun safe. It's a good weapon to have available if things go south.
So our third recommendation then is a pump shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
What would be our fourth?
Our fourth is a scoped center fire bolt action hunting rifle. These rifles can be purchased in quite an array of calibers, on up to things that will take elephants. I mean, seriously. But I really don't expect to have a problem with elephants in North America. But they're very, very good for medium-sized game, deer, caribou, elk. And this can also become a long-distance defensive rifle. Kind of hesitate to say sniper rifle because we're not talking half-mile stuff here. We're not talking about taking out somebody that's a quarter mile away or half a mile away. But it does extend your defensive perimeter. And much further than you could cover with a shotgun. I mean, you can cover easily out to several hundred yards with these, for the average shooter can handle one at a couple of hundred yards with no problem. And these rifles are very accurate within themselves. Most of them come out of the box at 1 minute of angle, which is roughly a 1-inch group at 100 yards. Pretty much every gun that we have here is more accurate than I am. If I miss, I can't blame it on the rifle. These are very accurate guns, and we'd suggest getting it in a common deer caliber, such as the 270 or the 30-06, 300 Magnum, or even the 7mm Magnum. But when you get into some odd calibers, it begins to become difficult to find the ammo, especially if we are into an SHTF situation and we're trying to barter or we're trying to scrounge that ammo. How many folks do you know are going to have 260 or 35 Whelan or 45-70? Those are not that comfortable. They're all great ammo. They really are. And I'd love to have a 45-70, but it's not really practical if it comes to finding ammo. Probably the most common caliber that you're going to find out there in the deer calibers is going to be 30-06. Now, the 30-06 carries a pretty good kick to it. I mean, it kicks like a 12-gauge. So if you're recoil averse or small frame or youth or aged folks, 243 is a good round. Now, it's not as easy to find in SHTF. And a 25-06 is a good deer hunting round for young folks. And these rifles come in a number of models. I mean, seriously, a lot of makers make these guns. The Remington 700 is an excellent rifle. The Winchester Model 70 is excellent. The Browning X-Bolt. And of course, the Ruger American rifle. Fourth recommendation is a scoped center fire bolt action rifle, great for use in hunting medium-sized game and extending your defensive perimeter.
Now, there's one that some believe is the most important prepper weapon of all, the defensive rifle. So our fifth recommendation for defensive rifle, the most popular ones would be in the AR or the AK platforms.
Yeah, a lot of folks think that if you don't own an AR, you're not a prepper. Well, I think if you're building your arsenal, unless you expect to be fighting zombies and alien frogs and
marauding hordes
and fire-breathing ninja turtles, this needs to not be the first defensive weapon that you have, but it needs to be number five in your prepper. Well, I'll go ahead and use that word you used, arsenal.
That's a good word.
In your prepper supplies. Mm-hmm. Now, as you said, most popular are the AR and the AK platforms, and they were popularized by the military. And the AR-15 is available in .223 and 5.56, and it's the most popular sporting defensive rifle in the United States. Now, it's also available in a 308 caliber known as the AR-10. It's a little heavier, and it has heavier recoil, but it's a great platform for the 308. So our fifth recommendation is a sporting rifle, and there are real advantages to the AR-15.
The AR-15 is very easy to maintain and easy to operate. And at that caliber, the .223 or the .5.56, it has nearly no recoil. And I can tell you from experience that I have gone from shooting a 12-gauge shotgun directly over to an AR-15, and the difference literally is night and day.
You love shooting your AR.
The AR-15 just doesn't beat you up. It just won't do it. You can also use high-capacity magazines, which can range from 10 to 40 rounds. The standard has become a 30-round. I think Mark actually prefers the 20-round magazine.
I do, and there's a couple of reasons for that. And one of the reasons that I prefer the 20-round is if you are shooting across a vehicle, a 30-round magazine holds the weapon up much higher. Or if you're shooting from a prone position, you can't be right across the top of that. So just I personally prefer a 20-round magazine over a 30-round magazine. Now, I know there's some 50 and 100-round drums available, but those are not near as reliable. And it's relatively quick to be able to change magazines from one to the other. Push a button, let one drop out, plug the other in, and go back to what you were doing. And you do need a stock of ammo, and you need a stock of extra magazines. You need a cleaning kit and some gun oil, and you'll be ready to go. Our last recommendation is a defensive rifle in either the AR or the AK platform.
The decision to own or not own firearms is a personal choice, and we support your decision. But if you're somewhat new to firearms and you want a well-rounded approach to prepper firearms, we think this is a good way to go. A defensive handgun, a .22 caliber rifle, a pump shotgun, a centerfire bolt-action hunting caliber, and lastly, a defensive sporting rifle.
Now let's talk about a couple of other things. With all of the talk about banning assault weapons, or banning what they incorrectly call
an assault rifle,
and which is the same action as my dad's hunting rifle and many of your hunting rifles as well. But the current administration has mentioned banning all semi-automatic firearms. In that, they're also including semi-automatic handguns. Now, there's a couple of things I've been thinking through lately, and lever actions and revolvers have not been mentioned yet. That may come up later down the road, but at this particular point in time, they're talking about banning all semi-automatic firearms. Now, here's kind of where my thinking goes. A lever action rifle looks a lot less assaultish or assault rifle-ish, if I can make that word, than does an AR-15 or an AK-47 style rifle. And it's less likely to be considered as a threat or banned first. The same thing applies with a revolver. Yes, there are some compromises such as capacity and range, but a bolt action has the range. It's been around for over a century and a half, and they work. So what I'm saying right here, if you are concerned about the possibility of your firearms being taken in some type of a ban or some type of a confiscation, you really might want to look at lever actions and revolvers. They're great guns, they work, and they're beautiful guns. They're not those ugly, scary guns, you know, black guns that scare people or trigger people. They work, and they are something to consider. And this is just something that's been running around in my head recently with all the talk of these bans and problems that we would experience with that. Anything else you want to add?
Well, we just want you to be very practically prepared and do give firearms some very serious consideration.
Nothing beats a gun when you need a gun. We'll see you next time.
If you find value in our podcast, would you consider supporting us by buying us a cup of coffee? You can do that by going to www.buymeacoffee.com/practicalprep. Your support helps us keep the podcast up and running, as well as growing. We have a few things in the planning stages, and your support will really help make those things happen. And we thank you so kindly. Thank you for listening to the podcast today. If you haven't done this already, go ahead and click the subscribe button so you'll never miss one of our episodes, and share it with your friends and family. You can reach us on Facebook at Practical Prepping. You can email us at info@practicalprepping.info. And our website is practicalprepping.info. And as always, remember, stuff happens. Stay prepared.